Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. We have some great stories to share with you today. Great conversations and two beautiful adoption stories. Looking forward to sharing those with you today. I always love adoption stories and something really unique about these stories today. And I can't wait to share with you stories from two great moms, outstanding moms, and just the way that God brings children into our lives. So looking forward to sharing those stories with you today here on Faith and Family. I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting this program. You can find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin on our website. Go to kfuo.org and you can find more information about Concordia University, Wisconsin in the sponsor section. Joining me by phone this morning, Brenda Jank. She's the mother of Joshua Jank, founder of Red Diamond Days, and mom to a number of kids. They have five kids total in the Jank family. And Brenda, welcome to Faith and Family.
Hey, Andy, thanks. Awfully good to be here.
It's glad to have you with us. I know you've got a busy day going on. Thanks for making some time with us to talk with us today. Tell us a little bit about the Jank family before children came along.
All right. I'm married to a great guy by the name of Tim. Tim is executive director of Camp Luther Haven in the northeast corner of Indiana. Tim and I were both DCE students in Concordia, Nebraska, Director of Christian Education. We served in churches in the Chicago area for a number of years, and then we received a joint call to Camp Luther Haven in 1993. And so we are working on 22 years in this place, and there isn't a day that goes by that we don't thank the Lord for calling us to this place of ministry and working with children and young adults and families. And so that's a little nutshell.
And what a neat story. And that's where our paths crossed as well. Years ago, had the opportunity to meet you and Tim and hear your stories. And it was about that time, somewhere around that time, I believe, close to when we met, when God brought some wonderful gifts into your life.
He really, really did. Tim and I spent many hours talking about how God was going to make our family before we even got married. And we knew that was going to include adoption. And from our vantage point, we thought we would probably have birth children first and then adopt kids with special needs. The Lord laid that both on both of our hearts. And as the story unfolds, we ran into a little infertility challenges. And so it didn't take us much time to go, okay, let's adopt first. And so we got our home study. And we were really, our dream was to bring home a child under the age of one or two. And we were open to various special needs. And so we submitted since that's kind of a unique thing, especially back 21 years ago, we submitted our home study to a number of adoption agencies all over the country, and one of them was Lutheran Social Services of Missouri in St. Louis. And one incredible day, we got a phone call from them saying that they had a three-month-old little boy who had sickle cell anemia, and Josh was African American, and in a heartbeat, we said yes. And we began studying up on sickle cell, and it took about 3 months to work through the courts and get us all prepared. But at 6 months, we had the incredible joy of driving to St. Louis and meeting Josh for the first time and bringing him home as our son. And that was in 1994.
And so Joshua came into your family. Josh came into your family, and a blessing that he has been. But the family continued to grow.
We did continue to grow. We did. When I decide to kind of make things happen, they usually tend to happen pretty quickly. So basically, in the span of 6.5 years, four more kids. So in 6.5 years, five kids came into our lives. And I look back and I chuckle. I don't know if we completely knew what we were getting into. But our next remarkable blessing was Samuel Alex. Sam was born in the Queensboro of New York City. We got a call when he was about 6 months old. And it looked like he had cerebral palsy is what the diagnosis was. We flew out to New York and met him and welcomed him into our hearts and our lives as a seven-month-old. And we had lined up physical therapists and all kinds of folks. And as we got home and got Samuel assessed, they quickly recognized that it really wasn't cerebral palsy. There was not any specific brain damage, but his arms in particular and parts of his body very much acted like he had cerebral palsy, but it was a treatable condition with very extensive physical therapy for about 9 months. Sam had wrestled through some neglect before he came to us, and so part of that neglect exasperated some physical aspects, which really led to what it looked like cerebral palsy. Samuel was actually walking by 9 months, took off, and he is right now a first-class private in the United States Army, serving in the state of Washington, working with Apache helicopters, and we are very proud of him.
Absolutely, and that just goes to show that while there may be tests early in life or even during pregnancy that may indicate that one might face physical challenges, but they're not always conclusive.
No, they're not. They're not. And so the journey continued for us, and we talk about Joseph as our first surprise. Shortly after bringing Samuel home, Tim and I discovered that we were expecting a baby, our first birth child. And the pregnancy went very smoothly. I had a one-year-old and a two-year-old, and we were delighted we were going to have three kids under three. And we ended up having an ultrasound at about 7.5 months. And through that ultrasound, we found out that Joseph was going to be born with a spina bifida. And so our single surprise became a double surprise. And it was such a blessing to know ahead of time. We had people praying for us and Joseph all around the country. The ultrasound and special diagnostic ultrasounds could tell that the spinal cord damage was at lumbar 3-4. Which is high enough on the back that there's typically pretty significant challenges with motor function of the legs, with bladder and bowel dysfunction. And so we were really able to prepare for what was ahead. We live about 3 hours from Indianapolis, and we made the decision to give birth to Joseph down in Indy so he could have access to a pediatric neurosurgeon right from the get-go. And Joseph was born on January 31st, and I will never forget, it was a C-section. That protected Joseph's spinal cord as much as it could. And they let me see him. They let Tim and I see Joseph for maybe 2 seconds before whisking him away to another room to be assessed by a team of specialists. And about 5-10 minutes afterwards, while they were sewing me up, a nurse came in, or a doctor came in, who I had not met, and she had tears in her eyes, and she said, "Mr. and Mrs. Jenks, I am delighted to tell you that your son is moving his legs and wiggling his toes." And the miracle of that, I don't know how often medical people, I know plenty of medical people use the word miracle, but some don't. And, but our time at the Children's Hospital when Joseph was first born, everybody called him the miracle baby. There was no bladder, no bowel dysfunction. He did have hydrocephalus, and so a shunt was placed into his head to drain off extra fluid. And so we have celebrated Joseph's ability to walk and run and jump. But, you know, like you said, every story, we never know what life is going to unfold. And Joseph, in a very unusual way. He has incredible function for someone with spina bifida, but Joseph also has a condition that has altered his life, that he develops benign tumors on his spinal cord. Mm. They're called dermoids. And we've had to go in 8 times to have those dermoids removed. And each time gets more difficult, mm-hmm. More painful. The last one happened a year ago, and he spent 7 weeks in the hospital in rehab, and he spent 7 months recovering. And the recovering process included 2 additional surgeries and a level of nerve pain in his legs and back. It takes us to our knees, mm-hmm. in prayer around the clock. So, Joseph is 18, and right now he is saying, "Lord, what is next? How do I live life with some potential medical challenges that knock on my door very frequently?"
Mm-hmm.
After that, we have another surprise, Anna arrived. We have 4 boys and 1 daughter, and Anna arrived. And Anna is healthy, was born healthy, although Joseph was in medical trauma when she was born. And so we were doing back-to-back hospital stays, and it was kind of a crazy little time for us. And just as we were kind of settling in as a family of 6 with 4 kids, an adoption agency in Indianapolis called when Anna was 18 months and said that they had a little 3-month-old who they were looking for a home for. And and so on a miraculous day in January, we traveled down to Indy and welcomed home Noah. And at that point, I remember when we had said yes to the adoption agency, Tim and I kind of looked at each other and said, "How in the world are we going to tell our parents that we're bringing home another baby?" And so we had the kids call Grandma and Grandpa. We were kind of afraid. But we figured we had 1 more spot in our minivan left. And so we were a family who had 5 car seats and booster seats for a lot of years. It was a tight fit, but it worked. So that is our miraculous crew that God brought together.
And a miracle family you are, certainly. And I've had a chance to meet all of your children, and they certainly are blessings. Joshua, let's go back to Josh's story, which leads to another story, and I'm excited to share in our second half, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But as you pointed out, Joshua has certainly had some medical challenges throughout life. But he's always had a care and concern for others. Tell us about Joshua's story.
Josh has, he's my tender warrior. He reaches out to people with a compassion and a care that has always changed lives. He just has an intuition of when people are hurting. And we have a chance, living at Camp Desert Haven, to open up our doors, both personally and as a ministry to many, many people. And Josh, through the years, has just ministered to people with stories. I'm blown away by the stories. Josh was born with sickle cell. When he was 5 years old, he had a stroke, a small stroke, and that sent him into a regime of having monthly blood transfusions. And having all those healthy red blood cells pour into his little body every months from the time he was 5 onward gave him a remarkably healthy life for someone with sickle cell. He did not have the characteristic episodes of pain that most people suffer with. But everything changed in the summer of 2012. Josh was having frequent, intense pain in his belly, and we ended up going in, and he had some surgery. And basically from that surgery point, he had his gallbladder and appendix removed. But it became clear that there was some other factor going on with him. And it took us almost a year to figure out, and 90 days in the hospital. Josh was in and out with constant procedures and hideous pain. But after that long year, his O2 count, O2 level was just dropping and dropping. And in May 2013, we found out that Josh had a separate condition called hepatopulmonary syndrome, which means that his liver is pumping out toxins that are destroying his lungs. For many people, that's a situation where a liver transplant will bring healing into their life. But Josh, because of his sickle cell anemia, was not a candidate for a liver transplant. And so as we talked with doctors, they expected Josh's had a life expectancy of about 2 years. And we began to digest that news. We weren't quite ready to tell Josh yet. As it turned out, that summer of 2013, everything that could possibly go wrong for Josh went wrong. And by August, Josh was not only in hospice care, but he was at a hospice home. And as a family, we were saying goodbye to him.
Mm-hmm.
And he was kind of in and out of consciousness. And a really dear friend brought some beautiful glass hearts. And these were for Josh to give out to people. And if he was awake, he could pass out these red hearts and just say, I love you and thank you for being in my life. Josh was 19 at that point. And then if Josh was in a place where he was sleeping deeply or not with it, we were able to give people a heart if they had come to see Josh and say goodbye and we couldn't get him to wake up. And it turned out Joshua absolutely loved sharing those. And but we ran out. And at a time when Josh was awake, he said, Mom, do you think you could find some more? And I said, I can try. There was a hobby store about a mile away. And I said, but what if I can't find them? What is there anything you'd want me to get? Well, he said, just find something red. He said, I really like telling people that I love them and that Jesus loves us and we're going to be okay. So Noah, who was 12 at that time, and I went off to the a hobby store and with a clerk, I was crying as I was walking up and down the aisle looking for red things that Josh could give away. And we could not find any hearts just like that. I found other hearts, but they weren't nearly as pretty. But I came across diamonds, acrylic plastic diamonds, and there were clear ones, and I thought, oh, they're clear, but I bought them, and then I turned the corner and there were some red ones. So I brought that back to hospice house, and Joshua looked through what I had bought, and in a second he said, oh, Mom, those red diamonds are perfect. Josh, when he was 10, he got an Asperger's diagnosis, and so he has a real attraction towards science, and he understood all about diamonds, and he said, that's perfect. They're red, and I can tell people that love makes a difference. And they're a diamond, and I can remind people that God does some of his best work in times of heat and pressure when life is hard. And it just slowly grew. He was giving away to family and friends, and I so distinctly remember him saying, well, Mom, do you think I could give it to the volunteers at the hospice house and the nurses? And I'm like, sure. And he started sharing, and the hospice house has 14 beds here in Fort Wayne. And, you know, before we knew it, everyone in all the rooms had diamonds. Their family had diamonds. And Josh stabilized. And I thought maybe he was going to make it for a couple weeks. And so we brought him home, and we continued to pass out diamonds. And in September, Josh was in hospice in the end of August. Oh, there was a big youth gathering, a junior high youth gathering. And someone was like, oh, do you think we should give all the kids diamonds? And we had a friend that bought out every single diamond there was in Fort Wayne. And she had her sister-in-law buying out all the diamonds in Indianapolis. And we just had enough. We had 150 to give everyone a diamond. And a couple of days later, her sister-in-law came up to give us the diamonds, and it really crossed a new place when someone who was visiting to connect with Josh was a second grade teacher, and she said, "Josh, do you think I could bring those back to my second graders?" And I think through all of that, that's when Red Diamond Days was born, is that not only could Josh give away diamonds, but other people could give away diamonds. And Andy, we have stories from people from 47 states and 23 countries that are giving away red diamonds.
And speaking of other countries, Joshua's story reaches around the world. There were a number of things that Joshua has wanted to do, and one of those is very special. And well, tell us about his connection with a young man on the other side of the world.
World, I will. In right before Josh got sick, we were praying for some friends of ours who were hosting a boy from China who was here for 5 weeks in the United States. Jing has some special needs, and he was part of a group that they really thought would have a good chance of finding adopted families. And Josh, we were, as a family, we were praying for Jing that he would find a family. And then everything went crazy with Josh. And on the trip back from the hospice home, driving back home, Josh remembered Jing. And it had been a few weeks since we had talked about him or prayed for him. And he said, "Mom, did Jing find a family?" And I said, "Josh, at this point, it doesn't look like it." And Josh, the look on his face and the brokenness was just, he was totally taken aback. And he grabbed my arm and he said, "Mom, my bed is going to be empty really soon. You and Dad need to adopt Jing." And I burst into tears and I said, "Oh, Josh, I would love to welcome Jing into our family, but I don't know at this point in our life where we are able to do that." And as soon as I finished my sentence, Josh said, "Well, I'm 19. I'll adopt him then." I said, "Oh, sweetie, I love your heart. I'm not sure that could happen either." And I said, "But you know what? I bet maybe we could see if we could try to help find a family." And boy, I just thought that was something that was going to go boom, boom, boom. And we started praying and sharing about Jing. And weeks went by and months went by. And then someone created a website for Josh. It's called reddiamonddays.com. And I thought, oh, this is going to get the word out. And we would get some interest phone calls here and there. A bunch of adoption agencies and adoption celebrations in Fort Wayne picked up the story. And in my heart of hearts, I thought, "Lord, you have a plan for this special boy who we never even met. We were praying for Jing, but we never met him." December came by, and January and February, March and April, and international adoption is this humongous undertaking. We have never been a part of it, but we've walked with other families. And we were coming down to the wire, and prayers were getting pretty desperate. Lord, the timing isn't going to work if a family is not identified. And we got this absolutely incredible email from Lisa and Mike Moreno from Nebraska, sharing how God had been working in their hearts and through the website and through some mutual friends, and that they wanted to hear more about Jing. And I don't know how much more to go on the story, except that we, from that point on, it has been just a continued focus of our prayers. Josh was able to help raise some money for adoption costs, because it is so... It is such a gigantic undertaking financially for families. And Josh kind of had a bucket list, but Josh is much more passionate about his Go Make a Difference list. And finding a family for Jing was the very first thing on his filmmaking.
And we're going to meet Jing's new family here in just a few minutes. We'll talk with Lisa Moreno, who you just mentioned, Jing's new mom. So we'll talk with her in just a little bit. An update on Josh. How is Josh doing today?
Josh, today is a very good day. I'm so sad that I'm not at home because Josh really wanted to say hi to everybody. But I had a commitment this morning that brought me to Fort Wayne that I could not get out of. And so he sends his love, and he's so excited that you're joining the Red Diamond family by hearing his story. And if you look at the Red Diamond site, you can find ways of how to find diamonds and care cards. And maybe there's some people who are hurting that you might be able to share diamonds, or maybe God will just lay it on your heart to share with, strangers along the way as God brings people. But today, Josh woke up great and with energy today. But Andy, it is a journey like nothing else.
Indeed.
Highs and lows, and numerous times where we've been saying goodbye to him. Every day is a gift, a glorious, glorious gift.
Yeah.
And so we take it one day at a time.
Yeah, I had the privilege of getting to see Josh just briefly last summer when we were back visiting it at Camp Luther Haven, and it was you're right, every day is a gift, sometimes we see that because of earthly conditions that make us see that, and other times we see it just because you know the because God's word shows us that that every day is a gift. Brenda, I know that you wear many hats, and with a busy family and so many needs, and yet you work diligently at helping others stay healthy and seeing that every day is a gift. Tell us, just before we go, I want to share with folks a little bit about the work that you do with Run Hard, Rest Well.
Thank you. With our special needs kiddos, life, like the last 2 years, I spent 190 days in the hospital. I have come to know that the rest of God, leaning hard into all that God has to offer us, is what keeps me, able, equipped, and empowered to run the race that God calls us to do. So I'm passionate about rest. And I see rest in four venues that God has laid out in Scripture. In the Old Testament, the story of creation, we see sleep and Sabbath keeping. And Jesus was the poster child for personal prayer and personal retreat. And it's those rhythms have altered my life. They have kept us going and moving forward with eyes on Jesus. So from what has grown from there is a ministry called Run Hard, Rest Well. We know how to run hard. We don't know how to rest well.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thank the Lord for planting those seeds 23 years ago when I was a student out at Concordia, Nebraska, from a fellow student who was a Sabbath keeper. I had never known anyone who took 24 hours to rest. And that planted a seed that God continued to water and nurture and change. And so things are launching. We're a nonprofit now, and despite all the craziness, God is saying it's time for this ministry to grow, and we're seeing it change lives. But there's a whole team. I just do a very tiny little part, and there's a whole team of people that make it happen.
We'll provide a link to that as well as Red Diamond Days with our archive of today's program. We're going to check in with Jing's mom here in just a little bit. Brenda, thanks so much for being our guest. Brenda Jank, mother of Joshua Jank, founder of Red Diamond Days. Just a beautiful story. Thank you so much for taking time to share Joshua's story with us today.
Andy, thank you so much for giving us that chance. You're blessing us today.
Thank you. You bet. God's blessings. Coming up in just a little bit, we're going to talk with Lisa Moreno, mother of recently adopted Jing. So we've got more great stories right here on Faith and Family coming up next on Worldwide KFUO. Let Worldwide KFUO help you get the word out about your next church, school, or organization event. By including your event in the KFUO datebook, it will be announced on the air throughout the day. Send your event information via email to jennyw@kfuo.org. That's jennyw@kfuo.org. Or call 314-996-1515. Be sure to include date, time, location, and contact information. The KFUO datebook is a public service of listener-supported Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
If you use email, Facebook, Twitter, or the many other online ways to communicate, you've probably seen the 4D ultrasound video clip of the unborn baby clapping his hands. Jen Cardinal and her husband were at the doctor's office for an ultrasound of their baby at 14 weeks into pregnancy. Lo and behold, the baby was clapping his hands. And as he did so, the father filmed the ultrasound while the doctor and mother sang the familiar song, "If You're Happy and You Know It, Clap Your Hands." This precious video has gone viral, and it's teaching millions of Americans that abortion kills babies. We could never afford an ad that reached so many people. Visit today's broadcast link at lifeissues.org to see the video, then make sure you share it with others.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
This year, KFUO Radio is celebrating 90 years of broadcast excellence in St. Louis and around the world on the World Wide Web. I'm Pastor Scott Murray of Memorial Lutheran Church in Houston, Texas. I'm here to encourage you to become a day sponsor in this exciting anniversary year. My wife and I sponsored a day on our 31st wedding anniversary in October. As a day sponsor, you get to tell a worldwide audience the reason for your joy in the Lord Jesus, giving thanks for all that He has done. And as a day sponsor, you're supporting great programming like Reformation Rush Hour and Book Talk. Where else are you going to hear such solid Lutheran programming? There are so many things for which to give thanks and celebrate by being a day sponsor of Worldwide KFUO Radio. You should call today.
This is Mary Schmidt. To be a day sponsor, call me 314-996-1518. Worldwide KFUO is the most trusted place for sacred music of the church every night. Weeknights after evening prayer, you can hear sacred music on KFUO in St. Louis, streaming online at kfuo.org. Our online stream is in high-quality stereo, so you can hear the difference wherever you listen, on your computer or Wi-Fi radio, and on your smartphone. We're Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news for 90 years.
Babies come with lots of decisions.
Cloth or disposable, crib or bassinet.
So when it comes to protection, go with the safest, most effective choice, immunization. Get all the recommended vaccines for your baby by age 2 to protect your child against 14 serious childhood diseases. For more reasons to immunize, talk to your child's doctor. Go to health.mo.gov/immunizations or call 800-219-3224.
Brought to you by the Missouri Department of Health and Senior Services and the Center for Disease Control and Prevention.
The world is the mission field of Worldwide KFUO. We bring the gospel of Christ to all nations. Worldwide KFUO reaches countries where missionaries on the ground can't go. Christ called us to proclaim the gospel to all nations, and that's what we do here every day at Worldwide KFUO. If our mission and worldwide outreach is important to you, would you please prayerfully consider supporting Worldwide KFUO at kfuo.org.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Glad to get to share these days with these conversations and this program with you. Thanks for coming along and spending time with us today as listeners and hearing these stories. I enjoyed sharing Joshua Jenk's story, and Joshua Jenk's story goes on, as Brenda just mentioned a little bit ago, to a young man in China named Jing, and we're going to hear more about Jing's story. Joining us by phone now, Lisa Marino, mother of recently adopted Joshua Jing. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning, Andy.
It's so good to have you with us this morning. Tell us a little bit about the Marino family. We've talked a little bit about the Marino family before, but with your husband. So I'm looking forward to hearing about the Marino family from mom and wife, Lisa, here.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, usually my husband's the one with the interesting stories.
Now, your husband serves with Operation Barnabas, which is part of our ministry to the armed forces here in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. And as soon as I saw your story, I saw the video on your story, I went, I know this family. I know the Marinos. So I'm just so excited to share the story today, though. But tell us about the Marino family before children came along.
Mike and I started our marriage with him being an active duty Navy chaplain, and so he plucked me out of my comfort zone in Nebraska and plopped me down in San Diego, and then later we moved on to Rhode Island before settling back in Nebraska once he was done with active duty. So it was an adventure before kids came along, and and then the adventures just keep coming.
As a military family, you probably move around a little bit, huh?
Mostly, we had two different stations in San Diego and then in Rhode Island, and that's about it. That was enough excitement for me as far as moving goes.
And then the Marino family grew a little bit.
Yeah, we added our daughter in 2005. Allie is now 9 years old and just a great joy to our lives.
Allie, 9 years old, is that right?
Yes, that's right.
Allie is 9 years old. And then, tell us, and Allie is the only child for a while, correct?
Well, yeah. Mike has two grown children.
Uh-huh.
And then, so Allie was our only at home, and Mike had gotten involved locally with a teammates program. It's a mentoring program in Nebraska that is just really awesome to help encourage kids in school and in their lives. And he had two different teammates and really enjoyed both of them. And we talked about maybe becoming foster parents, and we just never really acted on that until we saw an opportunity to be a little bit more than just foster parents come along.
Where did you first learn about Jing? Where did you first come across Jing's story?
It all started on Facebook. Some friends of mine in Indiana who know the Jenks and the family who hosted Jing had posted Josh's story on Facebook, and I read that, and it really grabbed my heart and made me start thinking that, you know, maybe we were that family. And the more I read about Jing and what his personality is like, the more I thought, gosh, that kind of sounds like he would fit in with our family pretty well. So we started talking about it and looking into it and bouncing the idea off of family members, and it just finally all clicked, and we decided to pursue the adoption.
Hmm. And so you came across this story of Jing on Facebook through various connections. And what did you first notice about Jing? Tell us about Jing and his life as a child in China.
Well, we didn't have a lot of information about his life to begin with, at least. We knew that he is kind of a calm, quiet kid, very caring, and it just kind of sounded like he would fit into our family. And we were intrigued by the idea that he had been with a family in Indiana and that they thought he would make a good addition to anyone's family. I don't know if I could have gone into it totally blind, not knowing anything about Jing at all, but knowing that they had had a really great experience and wanted to find a family for him made me really take it seriously. And Brenda Jank and the family who hosted messaging previously provided us with some contacts with people who had adopted so that we could ask lots of questions and get some questions mm-hmm. answered. And it was probably a good 6-8 weeks that we talked about it and made phone calls and researched adoption before we decided, yeah, let's go ahead and do this. So there was a lot of careful thought involved and some prayer, and luckily it still provided us enough time to get the adoption done before Jing turned 14.
What were some of the questions you had about adoption? What were some of the questions you had about this before you actually took those steps and started the adoption? What were some of the questions? What were some of the concerns?
Well, we wanted to know, first of all, going in, whether we were going to be able to afford it. We had heard that adoption was very expensive, and so we needed to know if there was going to be enough resources to complete what we started. We needed to know kind of what to expect about adoption, and one of the questions we had was just with adopting someone from China, not being able to communicate, and we were not sure about bringing someone with a disability into our home. We wanted to make sure that we were as prepared as we could be to provide him with the care and resources that he would need to flourish and have a good life. And so we talked to a lot of people about that kind of stuff, and there was a couple in Texas that we were connected with that has also adopted kids with special needs, and they really have been encouraging to us and were very encouraging to us at the start that, you know, things change a lot once the kids get to the United States and get some treatment. So that was a big part of finding out about, you know, whether we were up for this or not. And then for me, another big part was finding out whether he would really want to leave China. Being mm-hmm. almost 14 years old, I thought, gosh, he might not really want to leave, and what are we taking him away from? And that was a big question that I needed to have answered, and really we were only able to answer it in a very limited way before he got here. So.
Why was it important? You mentioned that you were able to get everything done in time before Jing turned 14. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. China, excuse me. China has a law that once the kid's 14, they deem them too old for adoption, and they don't let them be adopted anymore. And Jing turned 14 the end of February. So we really had to race with all of our documentation and everything to get everything finished before his 14th birthday.
Hmm. What happens to children who turn 14 who aren't adopted yet?
Good question. There, basically, the answer to that is there's no guarantees. Jing was very happy in his foster home in China, but he is pretty smart, and he knows that there were no guarantees for him once he turned 14. And doing a little research, I found that some provinces let those kids stay in their foster homes until they're 18, and some don't. Mm-hmm. Once they have to leave their foster home, a lot of the kids who are able-bodied go right to vocational school and then go to work in factories. Others that are not able-bodied get put into an adult institution, which is similar to a nursing home, and I think that their quality of life there is pretty poor. I've heard things through other adoption groups on Facebook that a lot of times their life expectancy is pretty short once they're in those adult institutions because they're expected to work and earn their keep, and they just don't receive the help that they need. And his education would have ended. He would not have probably been able to continue in school once he started in the adult institution. It's hard to say. He might have been turned out on the streets. China can do whatever they want with the kids once they're 14.
So Going through the process for adoption, I know in all with all the families that I've had the privilege of talking with and sharing their adoption story, that the paperwork and just all the things that the process, it takes time and it's a lot of work. Tell us about, you were able to go through it somewhat quickly. Tell us about going through that process of adopting Jing.
It was amazing to go through, and we would have never been able to get through it without our agency and the person that we worked with at our agency. Her name was Simi, and Simi was just wonderful. They send you a handbook, and they expect you to go through that handbook, but, you know, like any handbooks, it only gives you so much information, and we had so many questions, and if we were being slow on something, she would get on us and say, "Hey, I haven't heard from you guys on this. Are you clear in what you need to do?" And so she was always pushing the next step. And of course, if you pay a little extra money here and there, you'll get everything expedited as well. So all the background checks and government forms, we had to pay a little extra fee to try to expedite things through the system. And as it was, we just barely made it. Chinese New Year falls in February, and so it was tricky trying to travel around that and schedule appointments with the government around that. But when all was said and done, we adopted Jing on February 26th, and his birthday was the 28th. So
wow.
We just made it.
What a man! That is close timing.
It is. It really is.
So the 26th. You adopted Jing. The 28th, he turned 14. And tell us about, you know, bringing Jing home to the United States. Now, Jing speaks, obviously, Chinese, and you speak English. Is there, how do you communicate?
Communication is brutal. It's very hard. But Jing is very smart. And so he's very intuitive and able to kind of figure out what we're asking, and he's able to communicate with us. And then there's Google Translate, and so you just go online, and you can either speak or type in what you want, and it will translate it to any language you need it to. So we use that a lot, but it's given us some kind of funny translations as well as we go. It doesn't always translate things real literally, and he came home from school saying he had 2 prosciutto intestine for lunch one day. Took a while to figure out it was trying to translate sausages. so we make it, but Jing is, he's got a lot of English skills. He took English in China for a number of years, so he has a good basis for his English skills, and it's coming along better and better, just a little bit each day.
What are some of the challenges that you face? As you mentioned, Jing has some special needs, and so what are some of the challenges that Jing faces, that the family faces?
Well, with Jing's special needs, he's been diagnosed with cerebral palsy, and that affects his coordination, his balance, his strength, and his speech. So I feel really bad sometimes that we're not able to understand Jing because his speech is unclear. And as he tries to use translators, when he speaks into them, it doesn't always translate it well. So that's a challenge we have that we hope to address with therapy. And then he definitely favors one side of his body over the other. And he struggles sometimes to do different things. But just in the short time, we've had him almost a month now, and we've already seen a lot of increase in strength and dexterity. His hands have already changed, improved a lot. And we're hoping to see some of that with the rest of his body, too. We're still struggling with some insurance approvals and such to get therapy started for him. But we have a family friend who's been doing a few things just on a volunteer basis. And it's been great to see some of the gains he's made already.
How has Jing's adoption connected you to other families?
Oh, it's been really interesting. I work in the public school system here in Norfolk, which is about 25,000. And so I know of a few families in town that have done international adoptions. But our little church community and our parochial school, I don't know anyone that's done an international adoption, and I've been connected with that congregation for over 25 years. So it's been interesting to kind of try to find people that we could get answers with and get answers from and connect with. But luckily there's another Lutheran pastor just up the road a ways that went through the process 2 years ago and adopted a little girl from China, a baby. But they've really been great in encouraging us and answering questions and helping us wade through the adoption process and all of the stuff about visiting China. And then we've made a lot of connections online, too, on Facebook. There's some adoption groups that have just been great. And you get the good and the bad with those groups, and sometimes it can be overwhelming and I need to take a break from them. But when I really need them, I know they're there and I can get answers to my questions as well.
I guess you probably didn't think that you'd have a teenager in your house so soon, huh?
Yeah, and that a lot of people say, well, what's it like to have a teenager? But, you know, I taught school for, 15 years, and much of that was with seventh graders and high schoolers, and so it doesn't scare me at all. And Mike's daughter was with us for a while in her teenage years, too, so that really is a non-issue. It's not a big deal.
How is the rest of the family all getting along and getting to know Jing?
Well, it's been really fun. My mom, being a protective mom, was not always in favor of us pursuing everything and was, I think, just getting a little afraid of what it was going to entail for us. But when she came to visit for Easter, she really seemed to kind of fall in love with Jing right away. And our daughter is just amazing. I've always said that Allie is an easy and wonderful kid, but this experience has shown me the depth of her compassion and her character, and I'm just so proud of her as I see her interact with Jing and reach out to him. And it was fun to hear his Google Translate on his iPod speak the other day. I think we're going to become really good friends when he was talking to Allie.
Oh. That's beautiful. Well, glad to hear that that the family is going strong, that the Lord has provided for all your needs there, and that Jing now has a family and a place to call home. How has this connected you to the Jank family in Indiana?
It's been really interesting. We communicated by email and Facebook messaging for a long time, and then finally started calling each other on the phone. And we're just two busy families raising kids, and every now and then we try to connect and share some of our joys. And the Jenks have just been a great support, kind of rallying some financial support for us when it was getting a little tight in the process. And also just all the prayers and all the encouragement along the way. And, you know, Jing doesn't have a religion at all. He was not raised with a religion in China. And so as we go forward, you know, we really value those prayers from the Jenks and from all of the people that know about him. As he's asking a lot of questions about Jesus and just devouring all the information we give him. And Lutheran Heritage Foundation has provided us with some Chinese materials that he has, I think he's read it all. So.
That's great.
There might be a baptism in our future.
Thanks be to God. That's wonderful news. Well, Lisa, thank you so much for sharing your story today, a beautiful adoption story. And as I understand, Jing has a new name too, correct?
Well, we had to pick a name ahead of time, and we wanted to give him an American name as well as give him the option to keep his name. And so we chose to name him Joshua Jing after Joshua Jank. And Jing likes to go by Jing, but whenever he hears the name Joshua, he beams. And
says, he knows who that is. Well, thank you so much, Lisa, for sharing this story today. Thanks for being our guest.
Thank you for having me.
Thy Strong Word up next.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program.
Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.